So I've got something exciting to share. My book, What Are You Thirsty For? Rethinking Alcohol and the Life You Want, is now available for pre-order. It's about rethinking your drinking, not because you necessarily have to, but because deep down you know there's more waiting on the other side. It's about creating space for clarity, for calm, and the version of you that doesn't need alcohol to cope. So if you're looking for a refreshing take on alcohol identity and desire, just tap the link in the show notes and pre-order. Right, let's get on with the episode. Welcome to the Big Drink Rethink podcast with me, your host, Anna Donaghy. If you've noticed that the drinking culture in the UK is changing and you're curious about why and what this means to your world, then this is the podcast for you. Throughout this series, I will be chatting with the thought-provoking, forward-thinking people at the heart of this shift to find out what makes them tick and to explore the sober curious perspective from all angles. And I'll also be giving you oodles of personal tools and tactics to help you get on board the Big Drink Rethink. Well, hello and welcome to this toolkit episode of the Big Drink Rethink podcast. Now, over the last few guest episodes, we've talked a lot about why we drink. Well, we're always talking about why we drink, but we've also been talking about what we might actually want instead, what we might actually need more than a drink, what our body might be telling us it needs. Now, from midlife pressure and menopause to managing stress and learning how to breathe again, my guests have shared powerful insights and tools to help manage our bodies, our cravings, tools for change if we're trying to reduce or cut out alcohol altogether. Now, if you are thinking, or like I would have been thinking when I was a drinker, that I don't have time for breathwork, journaling, mindfulness, etc., I barely have time to think in this crazy world, then this episode is for you, okay? Especially for you. Because today we are cutting straight to the practical. These are tools that you can use in 5 minutes or less, okay? And say that again, 5 minutes or less. Tools that in that schmidgy amount of time can help you reset your nervous system, reduce cravings, and give you the sense of relief that you used to look for in a glass of wine. Now, this is not about having the perfect morning routine or becoming some ultra-disciplined Zen master, okay? This is about having a quick, doable alternative when you don't want alcohol to be your go-to. So whether you're in recovery, whether you're sober curious or simply trying to drink less, these are your everyday tools for real life moments. And therefore you should think of it, please, as your emotional first aid kit, compact, reliable, and ready when you need it. Now, interestingly, many cultures around the world do not ever rely on alcohol as a primary coping mechanism. In Eastern traditions, where alcohol isn't embedded deeply in social rituals, people have developed alternative emotional management strategies, ones that focus on inner balance and self-regulation and connection to something deeper. All right. Now, I ain't no expert, but I've done a decent amount of research into this. So, you know, for example, in Buddhist traditions, meditation and mindfulness have long been regarded as the best tools to manage suffering, a way of observing and accepting one's emotions rather than numbing them. In Japan, tea ceremonies serve as a practice of mindfulness and social connection, where presence and ritual replace the need for alcohol-fueled bonding. And in India, yoga and breath work, which is known, I think, as pranayama, are ancient tools for managing emotions and stress. So, you know, these cultures show us something really powerful. Alcohol is not necessary for handling life. It just isn't. It's the way we do it in Western society. It's just the way that some societies, such as ours, has chosen to do it. But there are other, more effective, more fulfilling ways. So, you know, that's really, really important to keep in mind. We think that alcohol offers relaxation at the end of a stressful day. In many other cultures, breathwork and mindfulness are used at the end of a working day or to provide relaxation from stress at any time. We think that alcohol offers a boost in confidence for social situations. Other cultures will look to practices of self-connection. We think that alcohol is a way to numb sadness and loneliness and anxiety. Other cultures turn to tools like journaling and movement. And for rewards after a tough day, it wouldn't cross many people's minds in those Eastern cultures or Eastern traditions to pour a glass of Merlot. They would instead be looking for meaningful rituals of another type. All right, so these alternative ways of managing emotions have been tested over centuries. They work. And the really important thing, the reason why it's so valuable to have them in our toolkit, even if they don't come from our part of the world, is that they don't just mask a discomfort for a few hours like alcohol. They don't just mask it. They transform your relationship with discomfort. They make discomfort less uncomfortable. Okay? So let's be clear. Anyone who knows me knows I am not a Buddhist monk. The closest thing I get to spiritual wisdom is watching Kung Fu Panda. I don't wake up at dawn to meditate. My downward dog is a bit shit. And, you know, I'm no expert. I'm really not an expert. But I don't have to be. I don't have to be a guru to borrow from these traditions. And actually, what I've done is over time, I've just dialed in to some of these tools, skeptically, cynically at first, not in a perfectly enlightened way ever, but in real life, in a kind of still trying to figure it out kind of way, I've had a play. I've considered them to be my playpen, all right? And what I've found, shock horror, is they actually work, not because they're mystical or exclusive, but because they give me something that alcohol never did. A way to actually process emotions instead of just drowning them in a glass of wine. So I'm not here today to play the role of a wise old sage. But what I can do is share what's actually helped me. Not theories, not abstract philosophies, no smoke and mirrors, but real practical tools that I've tried, tested, and on most days, not every day, I actually use, okay? As I said, not about achieving Zen-like states of permanent bliss. I still lose my temper when the Wi-Fi goes down. I'm not the image of calm. But these are about giving options. Because when you take alcohol off the table, you need something else in its place. Something that actually helps rather than just numbs, okay? Right, I'm going to jump straight into the tools and I'm going to talk about them in turn and why they're really cool, why they work, and the key thing I want you to take out. And importantly, remember, each of these takes less than 5 minutes to practice. So none of this bullshit about I haven't got time, all right? Breath work. This is the fastest way to regulate emotions. There is no argument about that. Breathwork is one of the most effective ways to regulate emotions because it directly affects your nervous system. Zoe Ewart came onto the podcast, I think it was only last week actually. Bloody brilliant. I mean, how good was she? She talked about breathwork in a lot of detail. We're not going to go into all that detail here, but she talked about it in a lot of detail. And, you know, left us in no doubt whatsoever as to how effective it is for regulating emotions because of the impact it has on your nervous system fast, right? When you drink to relax, you are relying on alcohol to artificially slow your heart rate and calm your mind. But your breath already has this power. You've already got it. It just needs to be activated. So, the science behind it. Breathwork stimulates the vagus nerve, which shifts your body out of the flight or fight response and into a calm, relaxed state. Deep breathing lowers cortisol, the stress hormone, which reduces anxiety in real time. Controlled breathing balances oxygen and carbon dioxide levels in the blood, which prevent lightheadedness and tension that's often linked with stress and panic. And studies show that just 2 minutes of deep breathing can significantly lower blood pressure and heart rate, mimicking the effect that most people seek from alcohol. So, the exercise, the tool, a simple breathwork exercise is the box breathing technique. Okay, you've got to consider yourself going around the four sides of a box, equal length. Inhale deeply through your nose, importantly, for a count of four. For a count of four, you hold your breath for a count of four. And then you exhale slowly through your mouth for a count of four. And then you hold again for a count of four. Okay, so inhale deeply through your nose for a count of four. Hold your breath for a count of four. Exhale slowly through your mouth this time for a count of four. And hold again for a count of four. And you just repeat that for 2 to 3 minutes. Or until you feel calmer. But it's quick. It's really quick. It's going to take 2 to 3 minutes. So the key thing I want you to take away is super, super quick, super, super effective. It is free. Alcohol is not. It is instant. Alcohol is convenient, but it's not necessarily instant. And it's scientifically backed, okay? It's a scientifically backed tool for emotional regulation. And as we know, alcohol, far from being an emotional regulator, is an emotional roller coaster. So, unlike alcohol, breathwork, box breathing, leaves you feeling better afterwards, not worse. It works, it's free. Don't knock it till you try it. And it's very, very easy to try. All right. Next thing I talked about mentioning, mindfulness. Now, mindfulness, in very, very simple terms, is the practice of noticing without reacting. That's the important bit. Noticing without reacting. It's the antidote to autopilot drinking, because when we drink to escape emotions, we're reaching for a reaction rather than responding. Okay, we're reacting rather than responding. We feel something uncomfortable and we reach for a drink to suppress or distract ourselves from it. Mindfulness interrupts that cycle and it helps you create a space between what you feel and what you do next. I'm not going to lie, I was a bit of a mindfulness skeptic and I kind of confused it with full-on meditation. And early attempts left me feeling pretty crap at it, actually, pretty useless. I felt unable to switch off my brain even for a second or two. Start thinking about all sorts of other things, normally involve food. And I'll become incredibly frustrated and go, oh, this is bollocks, and jack it all in. But the little mindfulness exercise suggested here requires nothing more than noticing, which even I, it turns out, could manage, okay? So, the science bit, the science behind mindfulness, it activates the prefrontal cortex, which is the area of the brain responsible for self-awareness and impulse control. So this obviously helps you pause before impulsively reacting. And studies show that regular mindfulness practice reduces rumination, stress, and anxiety leading to a much greater sense of emotional stability. Practicing mindfulness lowers activity in the amygdala, which is the brain's sort of fear center, which in turn reduces emotional reactivity. And research indicates that mindfulness increases dopamine and serotonin, which are the neurotransmitters associated with pleasure and well-being. And this offers a natural alternative to the fleeting chemical rewards of alcohol. I'm going to say that again. Neurotransmitters associated with pleasure and well-being that offer a natural alternative to the fleeting chemical rewards of alcohol. So a bit like breathing, our body's natural ability to do the things that we seek out from alcohol. Marvellous. So, how to do it in under 5 minutes? Simple mindfulness exercise is called the 5-4-3-2-1 grounding technique. And it is literally about sitting there when you feeling a bit stressed, or when your thoughts are running away from you, and making sure that you are firmly fixed in the moment by naming 5 things you can see around you, identifying 4 things that you can touch, 3 things you can hear, acknowledging 2 things that you can smell, and 1 thing that you can taste. Okay? The 5-4-3-2-1 grounding technique. 5 things you can see, 4 things you can touch, 3 things you can hear, 2 things you can smell, and we only yet tend to be able to taste 1 thing at a time. So the sort of the 1 thing you can taste. That's it. That is it. Sometimes these things are so simple, you think, well, how the friggin' hell can that work? It does, all right? The simple exercise anchors you in the present moment. Because when you're looking around where you are now, noticing the things that you can see, hear, feel, touch, smell now, you can't be thinking about all the catastrophizing stuff that your brain might otherwise want to have you embroiled in. So anchors you in the present moment, it interrupts cravings and disrupts emotional overwhelm. And it's brilliant. And that's going to take you a lot less than 5 minutes, actually. I reckon you can do that one in a minute. Okay. So the key thing I want you to take away from there is mindfulness doesn't remove discomfort. It teaches you how to sit with it and observe it and ultimately realize that no emotion is permanent. And when you realize that no emotion is permanent, you also realize that no emotion can create any sort of lasting damage. You don't need to be afraid of any emotion. They move away. Okay. And unlike alcohol, it leaves you feeling more in control and not less. Okay. That was mindfulness. Now, the next thing I want to talk to you about is self-connection. Now, if mindfulness is about noticing and not reacting, self-connection is about tuning into yourself without distraction. Okay. Self-connecting, connecting with yourself. Now, I'll explain this one. Alcohol often serves as a buffer, not just between us and discomfort, but between us and ourselves. When we drink, we are overriding our internal signals, ignoring what we truly need in favor of a quick escape. And self-connection is about reversing that pattern. It's about learning to check in with ourselves instead of trying to check out. Many Eastern traditions prioritize self-connection through ritual, self-inquiry, and actually intentional solitude. So in Japan, for example, they have this concept of ma, the space between things. That's the literal translation, two-letter word, ma, ma, and it means the space between things. And it encourages moments of stillness to connect with inner wisdom. So when you hear about monks sitting in retreats for hours and hours and hours in silence or solitude, it is creating this space and these moments of stillness to connect with your inner wisdom. You know, Buddhist practices use silent reflection to deepen self-awareness. It's all over the Eastern traditions, this. We just completely ignore it in the West. But by building self-connection, you learn to recognize your real emotional needs. You're listening to your body. You're listening to your soul, okay? And you're not just reacting to cravings and urges. So again, not woo-woo, not a load of nonsense, science behind it. Studies show that regular self-inquiry, this self-connection, lowers anxiety and increases resilience because it allows the brain to process emotions constructively. And research into interoception, which is the ability to sense internal body signals, suggests that people with strong self-awareness experience much greater emotional stability and less impulsive decision-making. It makes sense, really, doesn't it? And neuroscientists have found that solitude and reflection activate the default mode network, or the DMN, which is a part of the brain responsible for self-awareness and problem solving. So, you know, sitting in silence can actually very often mean that you can come up with the answers to things as well. So, you know, there's another sort of reason to try it out and give it a go. Now, a simple self-connection exercise, again, a lot less than 5 minutes actually, is just a simple three-question check-in. And the three questions are, number one, what am I feeling right now? And you do a quick scan through your body, right? Because you want to say, what am I feeling right now physically? What am I feeling right now emotionally? But that's just one question. Question number one, what am I feeling right now emotionally and physically? Question number two, what do I actually need? Not as in what do I want, a big glass of Merlot. You know, what do I actually need and what would truly serve me? And question number three is, what small action can I take right now to meet that need? Simple. It's simple. You know, a very simple practice to rebuild the ability to listen to yourself. So instead of numbing discomfort again with alcohol, we start responding to our real needs. So the key thing to take out of this is it's not just about sitting alone with your thoughts. It's about actively tuning into yourself and becoming the kind of person who knows what they need and therefore has a sense of how they can take action to meet it. All right, the next practice. Practice number four, journaling. Oh, I know. I bang on about journaling all the time. It's my favorite. So I'm not going to apologize for banging on about it. It is bloody effective. It gives your emotions a voice instead of drowning them. It is one of the most powerful ways to process emotions because it transforms thoughts into something tangible. When emotions stay locked in your head, they loop endlessly. Writing them down externalizes them, and that helps you get clarity and relief. So the science behind journaling is that it helps with emotional processing. So expressive writing helps people make sense of their emotions and reduces stress and anxiety. It creates self-awareness because writing about experiences activates the prefrontal cortex, and that allows for better decision-making instead of these sort of impulse-controlled reactions. And it improves mood. It helps actually with mood regulation. It does both. It helps with mood regulation because it sort of has been found to sort of lower cortisol, which is a stress hormone, and that sort of reduces the emotional weight of difficult experiences. But actually journaling over time has also been proven to lift general levels of mood, which is really interesting. All right. So there is a perception that journaling takes yonks and is intimidating. That is not so. Remember, this is all about stuff you can do under 5 minutes. So a simple journaling exercise is called the brain dump method. And this is what you do. You literally set your timer for that 5 minutes that I'm talking about, and you write whatever is in your head without filtering, without censoring, and without overthinking. That bit is really critical. Without filtering, without censoring, without overthinking. And when the timer goes off, you stop and you reread what you wrote and you simply ask yourself, what is this telling me? So it should be obvious in a way that the key takeout here is that journaling isn't about writing well. It's about writing honestly and getting emotions onto paper that helps you process them in a way that alcohol never could. Right, the next one, the next tool, movement. Often overlooked, I don't know why. I guess it's because when we talk about movement, there's a perception that you need to start going for runs and stuff like that, which quite frankly isn't for everyone and isn't necessarily very practical or realistic. But this isn't the kind of movement that I'm talking about here. Remember, we're talking about 5 minutes. Okay, tools you can do in 5 minutes. Moving in a way that releases emotions instead of holding them in. Emotions aren't just thoughts. They live in the body. And when you're stressed, you feel it. You know you do in your tight shoulders, your heart, which is racing, your mouth, which can sometimes go dry. Okay, they live in your body as feelings, and movement releases these stuck emotions so that they don't linger. And the science here is that exercise reduces cortisol and increases dopamine, which makes you feel calmer and more stable. So that's where the physical release comes from. Studies also show that rhythmic movement, which can be walking, it can be dancing, it can be a few minutes of yoga, they activate the same brain regions as therapy, which helps for sort of emotional processing and working through your emotions. And actually, moving your body shifts your nervous system. It shifts it out of fight and flight into a more relaxed state. So you get this energy shift as well. And this is literally how you do it in a few minutes. It's called the shake it off method. Sounds a bit rude, but it's not. You stand up and you shake your arms and your legs and your shoulders really vigorously for 30 seconds. Imagine a dog, right? Who's just come out of water and it's doing one of those kind of like comedy shakes, slightly frantic. Do that for 30 seconds. Shake your arms, your legs, your shoulders. Shake your wrists. Let your hands wobble around. Jump up and down a little bit. Stretch or walk for a few minutes. And I swear, you will notice that your mood and your tension has shifted. Okay? The key thing to take out, very simple movement. Very, very simple movement is all that it takes to release emotions rather than suppressing them. So just those 2 minutes of moving your body can create that noticeable shift. Again, don't knock it till you've tried it. And finally, the last tool I'm going to talk about, meaningful rituals. Now, we talked about Japanese tea rituals, tea parties. I mean, I'm not suggesting that we're all going to create those in our day-to-day lives, but even drinking a glass of wine is ritualistic. Pouring a glass of wine at the end of a long day, clinking it in celebration, or, you know, holding a drink to feel part of a social occasion, those are all rituals. But they don't need to involve alcohol to be powerful. Many cultures use rituals as a way to create connection and presence and emotional grounding, and they help mark transitions and provide comfort and make many ordinary moments feel meaningful. So what we're looking at here is creating a simple ritual. Now, the science behind it, again, is studies show that intentional rituals lower cortisol and increase feelings of stability and control. The known, the familiar. That's the whole thing about a ritual, yeah? The known and the familiar. The other thing about them is that they create social bonding. So if it's a shared ritual, then it kind of provides a sense of community and belonging, which again, you know, reinforces lots of positive emotions. And rituals increase mindfulness, because when you engage in sort of slow, deliberate actions, it helps anchor the mind in the present moment And that in itself can reduce sort of anxious, stressful thoughts. So create your own meaningful ritual. And if I'm going to give this a name, I'm going to call it the mindful transition ritual. Okay. Again, less than 5 minutes. First, choose a specific moment that you use to associate with alcohol, and that could be finishing work or going to a social gathering or winding down in the evening. And instead, replace it with a very simple ritual that engages your senses. And that could be a beautifully brewed cup of tea, or lighting a candle, or playing calming music, or having a bath with a lit candle, playing calming music. Or even stepping outside for some fresh air, but something which you do ritually, because you're making it deliberate and you're making it enjoyable, just as you would savouring a drink. So the key thing I want you to take out here is that rituals don't have to be really long, strung out processes. They can be little things that you do to replace the other ritualistic things in your life that you associate with alcohol. But they provide emotional comfort and connection. And they remind us that meaning comes from the moment itself and not what's in our glass. And that's it. My 5 minute toolbox. What you use is going to be deeply personal. For some, it's movement, running, yoga, dancing around the kitchen like a nutter. For others, it's creativity, a bit of doodling, a bit of journaling, banging out a few chords on a guitar. And sometimes it's just simple pleasure, like 5 minutes of losing yourself in a book. But that's the point. It doesn't have to look like a deep breathing on a mountaintop or hours of silent reflection, unless that's your thing, of course, in which case, go for it. It just has to be something that gives you a mental reset, that helps you shift gears after a stressful day without relying on alcohol to do it for you. And the best thing is, unlike alcohol, these things don't feel like coping mechanisms. They're just things that you get to enjoy doing, that slip by the wayside when you get sidetracked by alcohol. Things that nourish you instead of numbing you. So there you have it. Small but mighty tools that don't take hours, they don't require specific equipment, and they definitely don't need alcohol to work. These 5 minute resets are all about creating just enough space to pause, to breathe, to feel, and to choose differently. You don't have to overhaul your whole life, just need that moment of intention. And remember, this is never about perfection. It's about progress. These tools, they won't ever feel magical straight away, but the more you use them, the more they'll start to rewire your response. You're training your nervous system to say, I've got this, without needing a drink to back you up. So if something landed today, try that one tool this week, just one. And if it helps, let me know. I love hearing what works for you. And as always, thank you for listening. Go and have a play, and I'll be back next week with a great guest episode. Thank you for listening and getting curious. Please rate, review, and follow this podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you're choosing to listen. And don't forget to tune in to the next episode. And you can find out more about the Big Drink Rethink by heading to my website, thebeliefscoach.com. That's thebeliefs, BELIEFS, coach.com, where you will see clear links to the show.